Hi, everyone. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Janet Foster Show, where you get real talk for action. Right now, we are live, and you can get social with me now on Facebook at Janet Foster, and also on Twitter and Instagram at Janet D. Foster, and that's Janet D. for Deborah Foster. And the official hashtag of the show is the JFO Show, and that's hashtag J, F as in Frank, and O in Show. That's all you got to know. And, you know, just a repeat from last week, I just want to thank you for your responses to the show. It's been great. Your response to when we placed the show on podcast has just been phenomenal, and I appreciate the tweets. And a lot of you have been private messaging me on Facebook, and I thank you for that, giving me topics, giving me feedback on the topics. And I just want to thank you for the encouragement. And also, I just want to let you know I'm grateful for your support, because things have been really growing and moving really fast. And I last week we talked about a special fan opportunity. I want to reiterate that. You know, I'm launching a fan opportunity where fans of the show can actually have an opportunity to be my co-host with me for an episode. And the thing about it is you don't have to be in Los Angeles in the LA area. Of course, if you're selected and we find that you are in the area, that'll be great. But you don't have to be, because I know, although this show is based in LA, we're just growing with listeners. I just shout out to the Chicago area and in Florida and Miami, my old home. Thank you, Miami. And then the D.C. area, things are picking up. And in New York, I just appreciate the support. And what I'm going to be doing is looking for fans who promote the show on social media using the official hashtag JFO Show as well. And certainly, we will get in touch with you. Got some exciting things coming up. And stay tuned to social media. But I just wanted to let you know that we are rolling out that show. And definitely get social with me. And today's show, you know, there's a topic that I really wanted to have, because I've been doing a lot of research. And, you know, I'm a journalist, freelance journalist, and I've been doing a lot of research for a lot of publications on religion, because, you know, I'm a political reporter. And lately, as of lately, a lot of religion has found its way into politics. And so I've been looking at things and certain trends. You know, I'm a data hound, and I really look at data a lot. And one of my favorite data sources is the Pew Research Center. And earlier this year, actually it was late spring of this year, it was in May, the Pew Research Center released results about Americans, our religious habits, you know, for Americans who are avid or active, or they identify with a religious practice, as well as Americans who don't have a religious affiliation. And this report yielded that a large amount of Gen Xers and millennials, you know, and this show is targeted for Gen Xers, since seeing how your host is a Gen Xer. And, you know, Gen Xers and millennials are leaving organized religion. And that's a point that drove me to look at this further and start looking at politics. And one of the things I have noticed is Gen Xers and millennials aren't the ones that are injecting religion into our political discussions as much as I know we got those cool baby boomers out there, but it's a lot of baby boomers and some of the sandwich generation out there promoting religion and politics. But Gen Xers and millennials are leaving organized religion. More and more in both of our generations are identifying themselves as either spiritual, but not religious or tied to a particular denomination. And that, so it's like that we're unaffiliated. And then there's this phenomenon among Gen Xers and millennials where people in large numbers are identifying as humanists. And, you know, when we think of humanists, you know, for the most part, you know, we think about the great philosophers because a lot of the great philosophers were humanists. And I'm excited about our guest today because I think the time has come in our country where we need to have open and honest conversation about not just religion, but I think about being good people in general. And I'm excited about my guest. I have today my guest. Her name is Maggie, and she is from the American Humanist Association. And Maggie, are you on the line?
I am. Thank you so much for having me, Janet.
Thank you so much for being here. And we've been excited about having you on the show. You know, I've been bragging to the crew. I can't wait to have this conversation.
And me too. This is great.
Now, good. What I'd like to do is just start out and give you the opportunity, if you could, share with our audience, because, you know, our audience, we're Gen Xers and millennials, and there are a few of us that, you know, we've heard humanists, we've heard the term, and we know about it, and, you know, whether it's in college or in classes, but can you break this down to us as what does it mean to be a humanist?
Well, humanism in the simplest definition is the idea that you can be good without a belief in a God. That's really the simplest way to put it. Humanism essentially is a progressive philosophy of life. It's without theism. It's without supernatural beliefs. And it's the idea that we have this one life to live and that we should make the most of it, not only for ourselves, but for other people as well. We should work toward creating a better society, a more open and happy society for everyone. And so that's humanism in a nutshell. And what we're trying to do here at the American Humanist Association is promote that idea, promote the philosophy of humanism, and promote the idea that there are, you know, thousands, potentially millions of people who identify as humanists and even maybe humanists themselves, but just don't know the definition yet.
Yes, that's why we want to have you here. definitely. Thank you for that definition. And, you know, I have to say, you know, there are so many different descriptions of humanists. One of the things that we did with some of what we call our power fans that we do have a email distribution with, I kind of polled out to them. And quite a few responded. They were calling themselves, one person called themselves a secularist humanist. And then one, which kind of took me by surprise, was a Christian humanist. In your organization, do you have any kinds of coalitions or groups where you work with other humanists?
Well, absolutely. Our organization represents anyone who identifies as a humanist, and by our definition, being good without a belief in a God.
Okay.
So we represent people who identify as atheists, agnostics, free thinkers, non-religious people. We even, you know, represent people who, as you mentioned, spiritual but not religious. You know, maybe mm-hmm. folks who see nature as God, or, you know, believe love is God, you know, things like that.
Okay.
You know, people who see and experience awe in nature, that sort of thing. But these are people who generally believe that there isn't an intervening God, that there isn't a God that tells you what to do or interferes in your life. You don't pray to the God and get what you want. You know, that's not what generally our members believe. We generally believe that essentially this is life. It goes on a path the way it does, and that we're essentially in control of our lives. I mean, the humanist comes from, you know, being human-based, not God-based, not based in the Bible, not based in any type of, you know, ancient religion. It's more human-based in that we essentially direct our own lives.
Okay. So definitely what I hear you saying is, and of any type of organized religion, whether it's Christianity or Judaism or even being a Muslim or being Hindu. This is just basically the human spirit, so to speak, of this is life, this is what you're doing, and there's no other type of guidance other than you making your own decisions, your own choices.
Exactly. You know, in fact, we do have a lot of members who are Christian humanists and Jewish humanists and other types of religious groups. Uh-huh. And that's okay, too, because these are people who love the traditions of their religion or the religion that they were raised in. And, you know, I encourage people, you know, if these are traditions that you love and that really are meaningful to you, then great, keep doing them. And it's really important for especially a lot of people who are coming from religious families to keep those religions going, especially if it means something to you. But most of the people who identify as humanists as well generally don't see that direct tie with a god or this sort of, you know, more religious understanding of things. You know, they don't see the god as, you know, being the reason that they're doing this tradition. They're simply doing these traditions because it's something that's important to them, it's important to their family, but it doesn't have that sort of supernatural element to it. So we do have a lot of people who identify that way as well.
Oh, that's great. And that was that, and you sort of answered another question that I had, because I just found it quite fascinating how in my research that there were people who described themselves as religious humanists. So you kind of talked about those faiths. Have you found, where there's common ground? And the reason why I'm asking is because we've gotten to such a fever pitch here in the U.S. in terms of religion. It seems like those certain religions seem to be louder and more pushy about their views over others. Have you found, because I am aware that your group does have some coalition that you're building on common ground kind of issues, and I'm assuming too it's on issues of creating the betterment for another human being. But have you found that, are there some faiths that are easier to work with than others?
That's true, actually. We work with all kinds of religious organizations. Here in Washington, D.C., we have a lobbyist that works side-by-side with Baptists, with Muslims, with other Christians, with Hindus, even with Scientologists.
Wow.
We work together on common cause, yes, especially regarding religious freedom abroad. There's been a lot of cases where religious and non-religious individuals have been persecuted because of their belief or their non-belief, and so that's one issue of common cause that we can work with religious groups on, because, you know, we certainly believe in the freedom to believe or not believe.
Right.
We believe in the freedom of and freedom from religion. So that's something that we support, and I think that a lot of other progressive religious groups, especially here in Washington, D.C., that we lobby with, believe the same way, too. So it's a great way that we can work with other groups. But it's true that there are some where we particularly have concern, certainly fundamentalist Christianity, the particular ones that, you know, do things like, you know, polygamy and some of the other things that we have issues with, you know, personally speaking from a moral standpoint, certainly fundamentalist Islam, where you have people essentially killing other people who aren't Muslim. I mean, you know, these are particular types of groups, of course, that we oppose and that I think that the majority of Americans would oppose. So, but we do try to work with religious groups as often as we can, because, you know, the greater numbers, the bigger numbers, the more we can have an impact.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so glad, I'm so glad that you shared that, because my research of your organization, I'm very impressed with the work that you do. And sometimes in mainstream media, and I'm going to talk about my colleagues in the mainstream media right now, a lot of times there's a lot of twisting. And I think with groups that oppose religious types of activities. And one thing, and this is kind of a good segue into another subject, and that's, we always hear these stories from communities around the country where maybe city commissioners or county commissioners or even the school board, you know, they open up with a prayer, and that there's always a group opposing that. And there seems to be some kind of negative connotation with that. But then hearing that your group works, you know, in coalition with some common ground support of, you know, common issues. Can you talk about maybe how your organization is trying to educate the public more about what you're trying to do when you talk about the prayer, public officials praying before they open a business meeting on behalf of the people?
Well, our big mission is to protect the separation of church and state. You know, we're here to protect the First Amendment, the idea that, government cannot establish a religion nor prohibit the free exercise thereof. Now, we believe that people have the right to pray. You have the right to worship. We would protect that right, 100%. Mm-hmm. And we would expect other non-religious groups and religious groups to do the exact same thing.
Exactly.
It starts to become a problem when the government starts to endorse a particular type of prayer or a particular type of religion.
Yes.
Because right now in this country, Christianity is the majority religion. One day it may not be. And we would be concerned if there were, you know, for example, more Muslims in the United States who suddenly said, okay, we're going to start doing prayers to Allah, or we're going to start doing, you know, Muslim prayers before city council meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then suddenly we would have a lot of those fundamentalist Christians who first was in support of having Christian prayers in public schools and public meetings suddenly on our side saying, well, hold on a second. We have the separation of church and state. We should be keeping it completely neutral.
Right.
That's what we're trying to promote. The idea that government should be neutral when it comes to matters of religion. So certainly, could an individual pray in school? Yes. Do students have the right to pray in public schools? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioners who want to pray on their own, no problem. But, you know, when the meeting starts, generally speaking, I believe they should get down to the business at hand. They need to, you know, be concerned with what they're aiming to do, which is, you know, run their city or run their government or whatever they need to do, and really focus on that and sort of essentially keep religion sort of in the private sphere. I think that's what we're trying to do.
Oh, great. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that explanation, because a lot of times that's not how, depending on certain religions, sometimes the perception in whether it's school prayer or even, and we definitely have had cases here in California with students before graduation, the graduation prayer and things like that. And a lot of people really get hypersensitive about that. Some people don't really understand the separation of church and state, because their religion is their whole world sometimes.
I mean, as a
journalist, I mean, I'm a person of faith, but I get it. Everyone is not like me. I'm Catholic. There are some Christians that lose their minds when they find out I'm Catholic. And it definitely is an art in terms of coexisting. And some of the work that I think that you guys are doing, it's beneficial. And what I want to talk about and change gears a little bit, and as we talk a little bit more about government, I wanted to ask, because every group always has someone they may know. Are you aware if there are any elected officials who identify as humanists?
There aren't any open members of Congress who identify, but there are closeted members who identify as humanist or atheist or essentially non-religious. We know of about 24 actually, who have privately told us that they don't believe in a God. But, you know, they say things like, well, if you tell anybody, you know, we never talked and things like that. And we respect their view. You know, certainly for somebody, we respect when they want to come out and say that they're a non-believer. That's up to them. It's really not in our position to do that. But what we're trying to do as an organization and essentially all of these groups is to make society better so that it makes it easier for them to come out as a non-believer.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we really are working towards, that we gain gain respectability for people who identify as humanists, and more people identify, or at least respect the idea that you can be a good person without a belief in a God.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, something that you brought up, you said that your organization also represents atheists and free thinkers. And I know you've given us an excellent definition of humanist. Could it be this perception of, because when people think of atheists, I kind of think they think of, particularly Gen Xers, our exposure to it. We were young. I think we were young kids in the 70s when a lot of, I think, the old school atheists were quite disruptive, and it may have given some kind of negative connotation, and so when people see humanists, they might automatically think that, okay, this person is an atheist, and how we've clarified the definition, that's not necessarily the case. All humanists are not atheists. And with elected officials, you know, not being very open about it, is there a possibility attract that anyone who potentially is trying to pursue running for elected office and they already know that they're a humanist, is there some kind of way that they can contact you? Do you guys have some kind of contact or advisement for someone?
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
I mean, okay. First, I think that it's definitely possible to run for office and win as an open humanist or an atheist, especially, okay. And it's only going to get better for our movement. Pete Stark, who was the representative from California. As you know, was a great guy, and he was the first to come out as a humanist while he was in public office.
Yes.
And that was great. Unfortunately, he's no longer in public office. We really wish he was. He was a great person who was our ally in so many other types of issues.
Mm-hmm.
But he proved that you were someone who could serve in public office and be an out non-believer. And then we have, of course, Barney Frank, who served. And he also later came out as a humanist, even though he's also not in office now, but for other reasons, of course. So we do have people who can, obviously, and of course, as I mentioned, the two dozen who are closeted humanists, you have people serving right now who are humanists and are obviously good people and can run a country just as well as any other person. And so I think that that's important to remember. But I do recommend folks, you know, I say that use the term which is what makes you feel most comfortable. I mean, certainly I call myself an atheist. I call myself a humanist. But one of the reasons why I prefer to use the term humanist is because I like to define myself based on what I believe and not what I don't believe.
I
feel like when I use the term atheist, you know, it right away people are like, okay, you don't believe in a God.
Right.
But that doesn't say much else. You know, there's in fact, there's lots of atheists who would not identify as humanists and don't agree with many of our progressive issues, because, of course, we're a progressive organization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are atheist libertarians and atheist, you know, conservative Republicans and things like that. And that wouldn't necessarily fit with our mission and our definition of what humanism is. So I like to say that, I like to say that I'm an atheist because I don't believe in a God, but I'm a humanist because I believe in good. And I think that that's what I like to focus on. I like to focus on the idea that this is the one life we have and that we should be making the most of it. We should be doing good for ourselves and for society. And so I like to use the term humanist.
Yeah, and you know, humanist is actually more of a positive connotation. And that was kind of what I was getting to for Gen Xers, our exposure. Because I just remember, a lot of negativity, and even as a journalism student in the late 80s, every time I would do research and pull up things, atheism just has a lot of negative connotation in terms of how it's presented. Not that it's a bad thing to be an atheist. It just seems like it's not getting a good PR rap. That's
I understand. Certainly. Yeah, I think hopefully the more that people identify as atheists but also show themselves to be a good person,
yeah.
I think that'll help take away a lot of the stigma that's out there about atheists. But I understand, you know, that we live in a real world in a certain political environment, and so I understand that there are a lot of members of Congress right now, the ones who have, you know, told us that they're non-believers, to identify as atheists. And that's okay. You know, I think that really, when it comes down to it, religion shouldn't matter too much when it comes to politics. I wish it didn't.
Right.
Of course, it's a big factor when it comes to running for public office and, of course, holding public office. It shouldn't really matter. What should matter is where you stand on the issues. And that's really what we would rather see, you know. It's almost like if that religion question was just taken off of, you know, the bios of all of our members of Congress, that'd be great, because it really shouldn't matter. What matters is where they stand on the issues.
You are absolutely correct, and that's one of the things that we talk about a lot here on the show, and certainly some of the issues that your organization is involved with is things like scientific integrity, which, you know, being a Californian, we completely, regardless of your religion, here in California, we get it. We get science. I mean, this state runs on science. If it wasn't for science, we wouldn't have our iPhones and everything else here.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Really appreciate it.
Definitely. You know, Californians, we get it. We also get climate change, seeing how it's October and we still have it's supposed to be rainy and we're supposed to have a high of 65 degrees, but our high is 101 degrees in Los Angeles today.
That's awful.
So we totally get it. And, you know, one of the things that I want to ask you about the issues that you guys are involved in, they are progressive issues, and I know we have listeners that kind of fall in the spectrum. The majority of our listeners are moderate, whether they vote Democratic or Republican. And also, the trend with our audience is they're not single-issue voters, so which is kind of good. They don't just because they see a D or an R, they just don't flock to it. They really like listening. Can you talk with us, if there's anything that you can share with us on some of your current activity that you are involved with right now in D.C.?
Well, the primary work that we do here in D.C., as I mentioned, the separation of church and state, is mm-hmm. largely involved in the courts. So as we mentioned earlier, you know, school prayers, graduation prayers, instances where there is mingling between religion and government, we mm-hmm. largely get involved with. But regarding the progressive issues, you know, we're largely pro-choice.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with a lot of groups like Planned Parenthood and NARAL to ensure that women's reproductive freedom is not curtailed by religious individuals. And largely a lot of these issues stem from religion, a lot of the opposition mm-hmm. when it comes to things like issues like pro-choice.
Exactly.
Same thing with the environment and climate change. You know, a lot of religious people oppose climate change. You know, they say that the Bible says that God will take care of the earth and we really shouldn't worry about it. That's a problem for us. We shouldn't really be looking at the Bible. We should be looking at science, and science is telling us that there are problems going on and that we need to fix them and that humans are causing these problems with the environment.
Right.
And so we work with other organizations, science organizations, to make sure that we solve the problem associated with climate change. So environmentalism, women's reproductive access, certainly marriage equality, when
yeah.
that was a big issue at the Supreme Court, and legislatively, that was one of our big issues that we were very much involved with, again, stemming from religion. You know, there was a lot of folks who were saying, you know, homosexuality is a sin. That was their words, and that, of course, we completely 100% disagree with that.
Right.
So we were in full support with other LGBT organizations to ensure that marriage equality was legal in all 50 states and D.C., and gratefully we are there, which is wonderful. And, of course, there's lots of other issues that the LGBT movement is still facing,
right.
and we stand with them 100% to make sure that they have equal rights, just as straight couples do. So those are, you know, three, I would say, some of the main issues that we're involved with. You know, certainly we're involved with issues like death with dignity laws.
Mm-hmm.
I know that that's another big issue that's coming up in the news a lot lately, especially, you know, particularly with the law in Oregon and some other states.
And California.
California, right.
We just chaptered it. Our governor chaptered it, I think, 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
That's right, and that's great. You know, this is something that we also are passionate about. When you're thinking about, again, the religious argument behind that, you know, I'm not sure, I don't think it says in the Bible where we would be opposed to something like this, but I can understand that there are some religious arguments against the idea of terminally ill people essentially deciding when they want to die.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we believe, you know, being this is the one life we have and that, you know, we should respect the views and understandings of individual people, that they have the right to do that. And of course, people who are suffering, especially from terrible illnesses and pain,
mm-hmm.
deserve the choice to be able to choose, you know, when they want to die. So that's something that we're also taking on as well. So there's lots of progressive issues. And when we, you know, as you mentioned, your audience is moderate. We admit that we may lean, you know, maybe more liberal. Some folks, especially a lot of our members, would call themselves bleeding heart liberals. But, you know, we do have a lot of diversity. We even have people who identify as Republicans as part of the American Humanist Association, because there's so many issues that humanists can take a stand on. And so it's something that we especially get involved with. The issues that I talked about in particular are ones that we're heavily involved with because of that religious tie. We want to be the non-religious perspective on those issues.
Absolutely. And, you know, me as a person of faith, I identify with a lot of the issues that you're involved with, particularly with the Death with Dignity Act. And I know there are probably people thinking, oh, she just said she was Catholic. One of the things that I'm an advocate of is, you know, separation of church and state for sure. But also, I don't argue my points of my religion because I know everybody doesn't practice my religion. And I also am aware that there are other people that don't practice any religion. And so it's kind of if this is your faith, then talk about people within your faith not doing something, but don't bring everybody else into it. Definitely.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. That's exactly what we're trying to do here. You know, we have to understand that this is an incredibly diverse country in so many ways, and we're getting even more diverse, especially when it comes to religion and non-religion. I mean, as you know, you were referring to the Pew Research Center and their study, you know, that's saying that 35% of millennials are religiously unaffiliated, and that number is growing.
Yes.
As other religious identifications are actually dropping. And so, you know, the more diverse we become, the more that politicians are going to have to pay attention to our demographic, the more people are going to have to respect the idea that, you know, maybe we don't really need to involve religion in the public sphere. We don't really need to involve religion in politics. Let's talk about the issues. Let's talk about what we really want to achieve to make a better society. I mean, that's really what we're trying to do here.
Definitely. And I just want to give you just some shout outs from Twitter. I just had one of our power listeners, Moises Bringus. He just gave you thumbs up. He just said, I love her. Yes, Moises gave us thumbs up. So power listeners out there, you know, give us your thoughts. Let me know. Definitely. You are so correct at how you've identified millennials and just how I think people are experiencing that. One thing that in research that I've done, even among not just millennials, but in the African-American community, a lot of people are walking away from organized religion, largely tied to a lot of the issues that your organization is involved in. And people are just identifying themselves as, I just want to be a good person. And I think for my audience, you know, humanism might be something you might want to look into. If someone just says after hearing this, okay, I really dig what she's saying. How can they get involved? Are you guys organized across the country with local chapters, or are things where people can meet up with other people or talk to other people?
Absolutely. The American Humanist Association, we're based here in Washington, D.C. This is our national headquarters because we're very tied with lobbying and meeting members of Congress and getting involved nationally on the political level. Mm-hmm. But we do have about 190 local groups across the country.
Wow.
And you can find them on our website at AmericanHumanist.org, or you can just Google American Humanist Association. And so likely there is a local chapter or an affiliate near you, and I strongly encourage you to check out their websites, find out if one is near you, and attend their meetings. A lot of our groups are social in nature. You know, a lot of them just like to meet at a bar or go to a restaurant and just, okay, you know, meet other humanists, atheists, non-believers, and just talk all kinds of things, basically anything, especially politics, because that's something that a lot of our members are really interested in. But, of course, there's a lot of groups that are about building community. You know, they do social events, but they also do lectures. They bring in speakers all the time. They do community events. They do charity events. You know, depending on the group, there are so many things, but it's all about building community. And so I encourage people, if you're interested in humanism, and if you're not sure you're a humanist, but you're curious about what we're all about, mm-hmm, I definitely encourage people to actually meet a person who is a humanist and attend a local chapter meeting and just find out what we're all about.
Oh, that's wonderful, because that's what a lot of people are interested in. And some of our power listeners, that was one thing that people said, make sure you find out if it's cool if we can just go and show up somewhere, because that's what people like to do. They don't like the formality. So that's
absolutely
excellent.
And you know, we're small in number. You know, so we mentioned, you know, the number of humanists and atheists and non-believers, we're growing. You know, we're 35% of millennials now, but it's still small. You know, we're still the minority. And mm-hmm, so I think it's important, especially for people in very conservative parts of the country like the South. You know, mm-hmm, we hear from a lot of people who are in the South, and they say, you know, I'm a humanist, but I can't tell anyone. I haven't told my family. I can't even join a local group. And so a lot of the work that they do is online, and they try to connect with people on the internet. And so we know that it can be difficult for a lot of people who are growing up in very religious communities and religious families to come out as a non-religious person. But, you know, we're here to let them know, you know, you're not alone. There's a big community out there. There are people you probably know that are humanists and atheists. They just haven't told you. And so there's a lot more of us than you might think. And you're not alone in your belief or non-belief. There are people here to help you and support you and help you build community.
Oh, fabulous. And thank you for bringing up the South, because that was one thing I was going to kind of talk about, people in the South about that. And you just gave us that answer for sure. Now, one thing I want to switch gears a little bit, and we kind of talked a little bit about religion. I want to kind of go into patriotism, if I can, particularly some of the work that your group is doing. I know we talked about separation of church and state. You have a current campaign about boycotting the Pledge of Allegiance. And can you share with us what that boycott is about?
Well, I encourage people to definitely learn more about our campaign at don'tsaythepledge.com. Okay. There's a lot of information on that website, or you can actually visit boycottthepledge.com as well. Both websites will go that campaign and to learn more about it.
Okay.
But there's a lot of history behind how we got involved in that campaign. First, you know, we essentially oppose the words "under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance, mm-hmm, as it is written. And I think a lot of people don't realize that "under God" was actually added to the Pledge of Allegiance in 1954 during
really?
The height of McCarthyism. Yes. Yeah, it's interesting. The original pledge was written, it was like in 1886, I think it was, in the late 1800s, by a Baptist socialist minister. And it was very simple. It was something like, you know, I pledge allegiance to my flag and to the republic for which it stands,
uh-huh,
indivisible with liberty and justice for all. In no part of the original pledge did it include the words "under God." And there were decades where this pledge was being recited in public schools and recited everywhere that did not include the words "under God." And it was only added in the 50s essentially by the Knights of Columbus and a lot of extreme religious organizations pushing toward including God and on our money. And this is, again, around the time where In God We Trust was made the motto, In God We Trust was put on money. You know, there was ways in which, look, we need to distance ourselves from, you know, communist, godless Russia and say we do believe in God and we're a nation under God. We oppose that because there are lots of people, millions of people, who don't believe in a God and don't believe that we are one nation under God. We're one nation indivisible. And that's actually the original words of the pledge. And we'd love for the pledge to go back to the way it was.
Yeah.
We're about restoring the Pledge of Allegiance to its original wording when we were one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And so we started the Boycott the Pledge campaign to let people know about this history. A lot of folks don't know that under God was only added to the pledge in the 50s, but also to, you know, have people really think about what the words mean in the pledge. You know, we want people to understand what it means, and that the pledge in its current form is mm-hmm. discriminatory toward atheists, humanists, non-believers, and people who do believe in the separation of church and state. So we started this campaign. We did some ads on YouTube and on Facebook to encourage students in public school to sit down during the Pledge of Allegiance to say that I don't support the Pledge of Allegiance because one nation under God is discriminatory, and I want to let people know about that. And so it's been a great campaign so far. We launched it last September at the start of the school year.
Okay.
And so far we've been getting letters every day from students saying, I'm participating in the boycott. It's been great. I'm letting people know about my beliefs and why the pledge is something I don't support. And it's just been a positive experience overall. So we're really excited about the campaign.
You just dropped some serious knowledge. I'm a product of public school. As a Catholic, I'm very familiar with the Knights of Columbus because it's a mm-hmm. Catholic organization. I think a lot of this has to do with how things have been passed down by generations. Generations X and Millennial. I mean, Gen Xers, we entered the school system, the oldest Gen Xers, and it was 1969, 1970. So that was when the pledge started being taught. So you're thinking that's about in 1969, that's like 15 years after this was changed. So you've got two generations of Americans that don't know. And come to think of it, my mother's generation did not say it. And they actually, because being African-American, my mom had a different life in terms of separate but equal. But, that is amazing. Because for those of us who are Gen Xers and younger, we just thought that's what it was. And you just opened my eyes.
I didn't even know about it myself until, I started working here at the American Humanist Association. You just assume that, you know, you say the pledge every day, you don't think it's a big deal, and you don't realize that it's actually not the original wording. And there were reasons behind, inserting under God. And when you think about those reasons and you think about what those words mean, you think, you know, actually, I don't necessarily agree with that. And so it's one of the reasons why we started the campaign.
Yeah, although I do believe in God, I'd rather say it the way it was written. And if it, you know, so it, to join your campaign, because this kind of retakes my question, because, a lot of groups across America think that people who boycott the pledge, oh, they're being anti-American, when it's just that one little line. It has nothing to do with standing up for my country, respecting my country. It's just but not saying words that aren't the original words.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If anything, I think that we're almost more patriotic because we're looking to restore the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
You know, we're looking to, you know, we're talking about the original intent, which is that we are one nation indivisible. You know, when you say one nation under God indivisible, that almost doesn't make any sense because that is dividing us. When you're talking about people who don't believe in God and people who do believe in God, and we don't want to divide. We are one nation all together. We're one nation indivisible.
Exactly.
And so to me, it's really important that people think about what they say. You know, I think patriotism is definitely something so important. You know, I love our country. Most humanists would say they love living in the United States, and we're proud to be Americans. We're very proud. And in fact, it's one of the reasons why we think it's even more important for us to look at things like the Pledge of Allegiance, so that it's something, the wording of it, is something that represents all Americans. So that's all we're trying to promote, you know, the idea that we want a pledge that's patriotic, that can show love of our country, but that includes everyone, and it doesn't exclude anyone at all.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what the real America is about, inclusion.
That's right. It is.
And also, you mentioned something about our money and God We Trust, was it? That was
right.
also added in the 50s?
That's right. Yeah, it was all essentially a huge plan to insert God into government as much as they possibly could within, you know, some of the restrictions that were happening, obviously, with separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was around the time where it was just easier for everybody, you know, because of the height of McCarthyism, to simply say, okay, we agree with this. Yes, of course, we're one nation under God. And a lot of people who were atheists and humanists at the time were likely afraid to come out and say that they were people who didn't believe. And I think that there were a lot of people at the time, and even still today, who simply can't believe that you can be a good person without a belief in a God.
Right.
We're changing that now, but back then it was very difficult.
Yeah, and definitely, I've actually met some people who went through some of the McCarthy trials. That they're older, much older now, but this is phenomenal. You guys may have just got with me on the team as one of the believers who are humanists, because
thank you so much, Janet.
Yes, this
great.
Blows my mind, though, about the Pledge of Allegiance, because and I think it's a PR battle in a way at how it's being pushed with people. And then I think about Gen Xers and millennials. Basically, we've been duped into thinking and this kind of goes into what's happening now in Texas with history books, just creatively writing things. In Texas, it's about how they're rewording slavery. But,
as workers, it's so horrible.
Yeah,
horrible.
I'm just like, no, I don't think so. You just don't steal people and call them workers. They were workers, but for free, which means slavery. You know,
that's right.
You know, you just
it can be so infuriating to see people who are revising history. You're absolutely right. In many ways, there are religious extreme conservatives right now who are trying to redefine how we were founded. They're trying to say that this is a Christian nation. You know, nowhere in the Constitution does it say that we're a Christian nation.
No.
You know, we were founded on religious freedom and the idea that you can believe whatever you want to believe, but also choose not to believe. And so we have this very extreme group that's trying to change a lot of history. And luckily, we have groups like the American Humanist Association and so many other groups that are working to fight against these revisionists.
Absolutely. The whole thing about the pledge, we're definitely going to place that information on our website for people to look at that a little bit more. And that was one thing. The question that I got was from some of our power listeners, because we do have some people who have children who they push at their schools, whether it's private or public, they push for the moment of silence, and they want their children to do what they talk to their children about what to do during that time. And I think with the pledge, it's sitting down is one thing, but if there's are there any other type of, you said that you launched this particular campaign a year ago, are there any other types of activities that people can get involved with to try to get involved with restoring the pledge?
Well, absolutely. I mean, certainly we encourage parents, and if their kids are interested in participating in the campaign, they're welcome to do so. Again, you know, don'tsaythepledge.com. There's information on the site. They have the right to sit down during the pledge, which is a great thing. So if you have a teacher who says, no, you have to stand, even if you don't say the words, or, oh, I'm going to send you to the principal's office because you're not standing for the pledge, well, they're violating the law, actually. Students do have a right to sit down during the pledge. And if they have any trouble with that, they can contact our legal team. We have a legal center, the Opignani Humanist Legal Center. We have lawyers on call who are willing and able to help you. And I say that in addition with the pledge. I mean, if you see a church-state separation violation in your community, whether it's a Christian cross on public land or Christian prayers or any type of religious prayers that are happening during public meetings and in public schools by teachers and administrators, then certainly let us know at AmericanHumanist.org. We have a legal team that can help you during those opportunities. So that's one way for people to get involved. But I definitely encourage people to find a local chapter or a local group. They're also doing a lot of activism work in local cities and at the state legislature. There's lots of opportunities to promote humanism and to promote the idea that there are people who are non-believers. So I encourage people to get involved as much as they can.
Okay, excellent. Thank you for that. Because I know people are going to really be asking about this pledge. I can already tell. I've started to get in tune with our listeners on that one, because that was a hot topic, because they really wanted to get to the heart of that. Now, other than your website, can you share with our audience your other social media imprints that you have?
Well, I encourage people to join us on Facebook. Facebook is the big social media site that we're most active on. And right now we have very close to 500,000 followers on the American Humanist Association's Facebook page. So I encourage people to see that page, join us, like us, so that you can get, you know, news on your news feed. And we post, you know, 3 to 5 posts a day. And so you can learn not just about what we're doing on a daily basis, but also we share news about, you know, secularism and church-state separation. That might be something that you're interested in as well. So I encourage you to join us on Facebook. We're also on Twitter. We're on Instagram. I think we're on even Elo and some of these other smaller social media sites. We try to be everywhere, so that if people are active on these sites, there's a humanist presence there, and they can learn more about us.
Oh, great. And we'll make sure that we post on our social media imprints as well. So for sure. I just want to thank you so much for joining us and sharing insight about your organization and clearing up for our audience and defining humanism. Is there anything else that I may not have asked you today that you want to share with us?
Well, I just want listeners to know that we exist. You know, there are people who are atheists and humanists and agnostics that are out there. They may be members of your family, they're your neighbors, they're your friends, and we're good people, despite some of the negativity out there that says non-believers are devil worshipers or bad people, or you can't be good without a God. That's just not true. There are millions of people who are good people. We simply don't believe in a God, and we're trying to make this world a better place. So I definitely encourage people to check out our website at AmericanHumanist.org. I'm on Twitter personally at Maggie Ardiente. You're welcome to tweet me if you have questions. I know a lot of people generally have questions about, you know, more of what humanism is all about and what we do. So I'm happy to answer those questions anytime.
Well, thank you so much, Maggie, for joining us. And we definitely will keep in touch, and we'll keep following you and your activities. And certainly, listeners, please go to the Facebook page, and we'll give out more information about the websites that she talked about, boycottthepledge.com and don'tsaythepledge.com. And you know, our time is up for this week. But I just want to tell the listeners, thank you for listening. And certainly in the next coming weeks, there's some big things that are happening, and you will hear about it on our page, and I'll talk about it. And as always, have a wonderful week, and we'll catch you the next time that we get together. Thank you.